Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yidamide Parvasinjayanam Vireshvito Viragatim Griteshu Tukodara Vidagada Imasha Magno Rudam Veditarashtra Putre Vatu Priyam Jona Itis Swapasyam Krishna Sutanam Swapatam Shiram Shiram Si. It was just the respective warriors of both camps, namely the Pandavas. The Kauravas and Pandavas were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And the dead warriors, obtained their deserved destination. And when the son of Dhritarashtra fell down lamenting, his spine broken, being beaten by the club, Bhimasen, the son of Dronacharya, Ashvatthama, beheaded the five sleeping sons of Draupadi and delivered them as a prize to his master, foolishly thinking that he would be pleased. Duryodhana, however, disapproved of the heinous act, and he was not pleased at the least. Purport. Transcendental topics of the activities of Lord Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam begin from the end of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, where the Lord himself spoke about himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, both the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendental topics of Lord Krishna. The Gita is Krishna Katha, or topics of Krishna, because it is spoken by the Lord. And the Bhagavatam is also Krishna Katha, because it was spoken about the Lord. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted everyone to be informed of both Krishna Kathas by his order. Lord Krishna Chaitanya is Krishna himself in the garb of a devotee of Krishna. And therefore, the versions of both Lord Krishna and Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are identical. Lord Chaitanya desired that all who are born in India seriously understand such transcendental Krishna Katha, and then after full realization, preach the transcendental message to everyone in all parts of the world. That will bring about the desired peace and prosperity of the world. Om Jnana of the stricken world. Om Jnana Timuram Dasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripashindu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from New York, the Bhakti Center. I'm spending more time here. We have this 9-week seminar on Nectar Devotion. If you go to on the Facebook, Nectar Devotion by Dhanadhar Swami or something, I think there's a Facebook page where Rati Krishna, he's videoing all the lectures and also providing audio. But I guess I mentioned this last week, but I'm so excited about it, that the process works, and these are people necessarily, I don't think, that necessarily believe that Krishna is God. They're just attracted and want to know more, but this is the way. I've just seen it. When you hear as spoken in this verse, the Krishna Katas, the Gita and the Bhagavatam, and books by the Sixth Goswamis based on the Gita and the Bhagavatam, it changes one's mind. Without changing your mind, you're not going to change your identity. Buddha Bhava Samavita. So I'm really happy about it. I guess the other hand, by the time it comes around on today, I don't really have prepared, but I mean, I am prepared because I've studied this so many times. But we're in the section where Maharaj Prickett is being discussed. We know the seed of this is in the first chapter of the Bhagavatam, where the sages are gathering at the beginning of Kali Yuga, and Krishna has left the planet, and they want to know what to do, and Sutta says that When Krishna's left the planet, knowledge and religion will be maintained in the Bhagavatam. I heard and I realized it. I'll explain it to you. And they're excited, and they wanted a little bit more details. And they asked about the Vyasadeva, the original compiler, editor of the Bhagavatam, the son who he taught it to, and in the cyclic succession to Maharaj Prickett, who learned it from Sukadeva Goswami. So now we're beginning the story of Maharaj Prickett. And since the sages of Naimisharanya asked the question that he was perfect both in his they wanted to hear about him because he was perfect in his birth, his life, and his death. Was starting to answer that question, Sita Goswami is narrating about his birth. And his birth is quite unique because an enemy of his mother tried to abort the baby in her womb by directing a smart bomb, atomic weapon called the Brahmastra to the womb. And so we learn about his birth, how Krishna appeared in the womb. And two things happened. One, it's just such a good point about samskaras. When you can give child good impressions when they're young, it sticks with them for the rest of their lives. So he saw God, and God is all attractive. It makes the greatest impression. If you can actually approach God with an open heart and an open faith, and there's nothing more attractive than God. So to have impressions of God when you're young is the most powerful thing. So he became known as Prickett because that impression, because it made such an impression on him. It made such an impression on him that it lasted for the rest of his life. He always searched for Krishna. And basically, actually, this is how we come to bhakti. We were just studying Nectar of Devotion. It said, no one can come to Krishna consciousness without some previous connection. It means committed Krishna consciousness. Pure devotional service where you want to... actually, your objective is to surrender to Krishna fully, and you understand that. No one can come without some previous impression. Of what? There's some scars that are made unknowingly by coming in contact with Krishna or Krishna's devotee or Krishna's holy name, and it creates a powerful impression in the consciousness that you search after for the rest of your life. That's how I came to Krishna consciousness. I got an impression by association with the devotees, the philosophy, the prasadam, and the holy name. It was so attractive that I'm searching for that the rest of my life. And after 40 years, I'm still on that journey to realize it. And that's how Krishna consciousness spreads. That's why they have that Harinam in New York. People get an impression. And that's how it starts. And then somehow or other, sometimes it gets covered, but the impression is there. It's eternal. Mehapika manashrosti. Pachyavayana vidyate. Swapam apyasyat. Dharma Sutrayate Vidyatova. That it stays there permanently, and then at a particular time, whatever the case is, you may access it by meeting a devotee again, and then adopt the practices to actually cultivate it. So they want to hear about Marge Prickett, and therefore the story starts at the end of the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And the second thing is, it's the first time we see Krishna, because he's in the war as the charioteer of Arjuna, who, that's, his, the sons of his wife, were killed, so he's involved, and therefore Krishna's involved. We begin to see Krishna, we begin to see the attachment that people, the devotees, have for Krishna. There is nothing more attractive than God. We think there is, because we have other faith, other samskaras, but actually speaking, there's nothing more attractive to God, and therefore what sadhana bhakti means is to focus your consciousness on Krishna. Because it will pull out the devotion in one's heart. So, the son of Dronacharya, Ashvatthama, he kills the children and delivers them to Duryodhana. But even Duryodhana, who's evil-minded, is not pleased. What people will do in the name of truth, and misunderstanding truth, people will pursue truth if they experience a drop of truth, but without some bandhagyan, without the proper guidance, without the proper knowledge, you can morph into anything. I even read one statement that all evil is absolute, is relative truth made absolute. We can make relative. The absolute truth is that there's Krishna and I'm his servant. And then there are details, and we can make them absolute in a way that we can cause harm. Anything. Surrender to Guru. And then in the name of surrender to Guru, one could do crazy things. Offend other Vaishnavas. There always has to be some bandhagyan. There has to be balanced knowledge. There has to be a depth of knowledge. Shouldn't be blind following. Once you get his doubts cleared and understand things clearly so that you can actually serve your interests. Nate vidu swartha gatim hi Vishnu. People do not know. The swartha gatim, the goal that is swartha, that is the best value for us, is Vishnu. Okay. So we'll read on. Draupadi, the mother of the five children of the Pandavas, after hearing the massacre of her sons, began to cry in distress, his eyes full of tears. Trying to pacify her in her great loss, Arjuna spoke to her thus. So Arjuna is there, means Krishna is there because he's driving his chariot, so we're introduced. Oh, gentle lady, when I present you with the head of that brahmana, after beheading him with arrows from my Gandiva bow, I shall then wipe the tears from your eyes and pacify you. Then after burning your son's bodies, you can take baths standing on his head. Purport, an enemy who sets fire to the house, administers poison, attacks all of a sudden with deadly weapons, plunders wealth, or usurps agricultural fields, or entices one's wife is called an aggressor. Such an aggressor, though he may be a Brahmin or a so-called son of a Brahmin, has to be punished in all circumstances. When Arjuna promised to behead the aggressor named Ashvatthama, he knew well that Ashvatthama was the son of a Brahmin. But because the so-called Brahmin acted like a butcher, he was taken as such. And there is no question of sin in killing such a Brahmin's son, who proved to be a villain. So Arjuna is upset. The son, five sons of his wife were killed without mercy. And they're aggressors, and they should be killed. The soul is eternal. In modern days, they feel that the death penalty is cruel. One is because they make so many mistakes. And sometimes innocent people are killed. But also, basically, people don't have a conception of the eternal nature of the soul. When you want to make a solid decision, then your decision should be based on full understanding. So, you're not ending a person's existence by killing someone. What you're doing is you're freeing him, because people don't know the law of karma either. You're actually giving a person his karma in the least painful way, actually. So it's actually merciful to capital punishment is merciful when you have a reasonable way of ascertaining the validity of someone's crime. And it's, rather than, the person commits a crime and society pays millions of dollars for the rest of the life to keep the person alive. For what purpose? It's not for his benefit. It's not for the society's benefit. It's not for the relatives of the victim's benefit. The only thing is you can't institute that unless you have a viable system to determine. And sometimes we see, out of prejudice, someone may be accused. Arjuna is guided by the infallible Lord as a friend and driver, thus satisfied the dear lady by such statements. Then he dressed in armor and armed himself with furious weapons. Getting into his chariot, he set out to follow Ashvatthama, the son of his martial teacher. It's interesting because I get classes on forgiveness. And one story which is quite remarkable is when some person came into an Amish schoolhouse and killed all the children. And the Amish immediately forgave the person, and I think even took the children in as their own or something. Not the children. The wife of the murderer or something, which is, there's a good sentiment there. Forgiveness is is Dharma. It's an action that elevates your consciousness. Resentment, which means recent fear, to again visit becomes morbid after a while. But the question always becomes when. Unilaterally at the earliest possible moment. And I don't usually ascribe that or absolutely ascribe to that. I think when there's loving relationships and someone is killed, let's say it's the child of a mother, then maybe there's some room for some moral indignation for some time to, as an expression of one's love. Of course, there's a certain period of time where to keep on revisiting, recent here becomes morbid, but anyway, it seems here in the Bhagavatam that Draupadi was furious. Should we preach to her to be more forgiving? Her five children were killed. It's really an interesting question. But here in the Bhagavatam, it seems her husband's upset. And she's furious. So, and then we see at the end, then she's forgiving. So I think that's reasonable. She's an exalted soul. She was able to forgive or show some compassion. Show some compassion, also some respect for her lineage. It's her husband's, the son of her husband's guru. But she had some moral indignation, and she was upset. She was satisfied by those statements, it says. And then he took off. Ashwatthama, the murderer of the princes, seeing from a great distance Arjuna coming at him with great speed, fled in his chariot, panic-stricken, just to save his life, as Brahma fled in fear from Shiva. So it's something beautiful also in the Kshatriya Bhav. Kshatriya means chayate, to protect. Kshat means from hurt. And they have a spirit. I remember Prabhupada was talking about some war America was in. I forgot which one, Cambodia or something. He said if the American president was Krishna conscious, he would say, if you harm one hair on the head of our man, there'd be fight. It's a Bhav. Happy are those Kshatriyas whose battles come unsought. We had a discussion in our class, was very interesting, in the Bhagavatam class. I give Bhagavatam here in the morning. And what was that discussion? So interesting, I wish I could. Yeah, I was explaining that you know, the Bhagavatam makes you fearless at death, and death is the most frightening thing, because what we fear more than anything else is losing the things that we're attached to. And at death, we lose everything. So if you're attached at the time of death, it's the pain. Even now, if you lost a loved one, you lost your house, you're looking forward to something, but everything is gone at death. And it's terrifying. The experience of apparent non-existence is terrifying. And the point I was making is we're going to have to face it. And the most wonderful thing is Yamaraj, Yudhisthira answered Yamaraj's question. The most wonderful thing is that everyone's died, but we don't act like this is a reality for us. We act like we're going to, you know, everyone's died, but we don't act like that's a reality for us. That's the most wonderful thing. It's the most amazing thing. We experience something that we refuse to see. But when we die and we take birth again, and this is one of the proofs of reincarnation, even a child who had no experience of death in that life is terrified of death. Because the samskara, the impression, the aversion to that event that happens at the end of life is just so heavy, it remains. But someone asked the question, though, that we see that, and person Adi in the class gave so many examples of people who weren't afraid to die, a mother saving their child. Firemen going into a building and the Kshatriyas. Happy are those Kshatriyas whose battles come unsought. See, so had they overcome that impression, the only thing I could surmise is that in Rasa, there are certain overwhelming experiences of love, like chivalry, love of country. It's a bhav. Mother's love is so powerful. Rasa. Rasa means overwhelming emotion, that it can even cover even that samskara and fear. But Ashvatthama, he's fearful of his life. Because Arjuna is coming to him. According to the reading matter, either Ka or Arka, there are two references to the Puranas. Ka means Brahma, who once became allured by his daughter and began to follow her, which infuriated Shiva, who attacked Brahma with his trident. Brahmaji fled in fear of his life. As far as Arka is concerned, there's a reference in the Vamana Purana. It was a demon by the name, because this was the word that used, he fled in fear of Shiva, and the word was Ka. So it can either be Brahma or Arka, Surya. So there was a demon by the name Vidyun Mali, who was gifted with a glowing airplane which traveled to the back of the sun, and night disappeared because of the glowing effulgence of this plane. Thus the sun god became angry, and with his virulent rays he melted the plane. This enraged Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva then attacked the sun god, who fled away and at last fell down at Kashi, Varanasi. The place became famous as Lotarka. Translation, when the son of the Brahmin, Ashvatthama, saw that his horses were tired, he considered that there was no alternative for protection outside of his using the ultimate weapon, the Brahmastra. Purport, in the ultimate issue only, when there is no alternative, the nuclear weapon called the Brahmastra is applied. The word Dvijatmaja is significant here because Ashvatthama, although the son of Dronacharya, was not exactly a qualified Brahmin. The most intelligent man is called a Brahmin and is not a hereditary title. Ashvatthama was also formally called the Brahma Bandhu, or the friend of a Brahmin. Being a friend of a Brahmin does not mean that one is a Brahmin by qualification. A friend or a son of a Brahmin, when fully qualified, may be called a Brahmin and not otherwise. Since Ashvatthama's decision is mature, he is purposely called a son, Dvija Atmaja. He's the son of a Brahmin. He's the friend of a Brahmin. So he's Brahma Bandhu. You're not qualified. You have relation, but you're not qualified. You're the friend. You're the son. But you're not what you were the friend of. You're not what you're the son of. And, of course, this is the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Of course, it's Bhagavad Gita. Chaturvanyam maya srishtam guna karma vibhagasa. It's guna, it's the qualities, it's karma, it's the work. That is what qualifies one for chaturvanyam, four types. It's what kind of work you have, what kind of qualities you have. Of course, suchinam shunatam gehe yoga brashta vijayate. It says in Bhagavad Gita that when one is very, very progressive on a spiritual path that doesn't complete, he can get born in an aristocratic family or the family of Brahmins or teachers. So there is karma. So the birth is not completely negated. It's just not the ultimate criteria for work. It's just not the ultimate. You know, in the we're studying in the Nectar of Devotion. When you practice devotional service in a steady way, then one of the symptoms is Klesha Agni. The first symptom is that it burns up the troubles that one has, the difficulties that one has, and there's three types of causes of suffering, and that's tapam is the first. Sinful reactions. You act sinfully, which means once you act against your higher interest, which is to be a servant of God, there's an apparent happiness. There's an apparent happiness of sense gratification, getting one's desires and egos fulfilled. But it's actually not happiness. In fact, it causes distress. We're reading in the Nectar of Devotion that when you practice devotional service, it doesn't exactly create something in you that's not there. It uncovers something that is there. It's like a child's walking. Prabhupada gave the example of someone who's mentally ill. What you're trying to do is just revive their original state, their original identity, their original understanding. You're not trying to give someone a new identity. And it's described by the process of devotional service, you can even get rid of Prarabdha Karma. And Prarabdha Karma is sinful reactions are basically divided into two. Those which will not take place in this life, but are in the storehouse of your sinful reactions, which is pretty scary because you don't know what God will funnel next for your benefit. And sometimes it's really heavy for your benefit to bring you to the real platform of happiness. God won't let us be satisfied on a platform of happiness that ultimately is not satisfying. Even if you had everything you want, it's still temporary and filled with fear, and it's superficial. So God's mercy is he doesn't allow us to stay on the temporary platform of so-called happiness, and he even disrupts that to impel us to go to the eternal and real platform of happiness, which is the happiness of the soul. So although it appears to be cruel, it's actually God's mercy. Anyway, there are sinful reactions. And one of the sinful reactions is low birth, especially in the Indian culture, but low birth. We can see people, they're good karma, get a very, very high birth. So it's low birth. That's one of the sinful reactions. And that's manifest. It's Prarabdha. but it describes that one takes to pure devotional service, even if he's born in a family of dog ears, and it is present tense. It means now, which he can, he's eligible to perform sacrifice. So he's counteracted the suffering of low birth that has restricted him in certain ways. Some commentators say, well, maybe he still won't be able to do sacrifice because the culture will not give him the Brahmin initiation, or he's nullified the lack of qualification by birth, but there's other qualifications too. But anyway, this is the point. Ultimately, our status is based on guna karma, the qualities we have and the work we do. That's the ultimate criteria. Okay, I'm going to stop here. Just, are there any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Gail, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, just on this last point, you're saying that an example of corruptive karma that can be eradicated is the low birth.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, is there another example of corruptive karma that can be eradicated? Because this low birth, I wasn't so...
Yeah, I know there's a distinction made about this some corrupted karma.
I'm going to mute my phone,
yes.
Okay.
There's some type of corrupted karma that, in one sense, can't be counteracted. But it can be counteracted in the sense that the suffering can be counteracted. When you have devotional service and we have faith in God and we have a different perspective. Yeah, I know someone who is physically deformed. I know two or three people that were physically deformed. And, you know, they must have went through hell growing up in America or Russia, wherever that is, you know, with the modern society. But they became so spiritually advanced that they became so respected. So that would be the bad karma of some physical disability, not just the pain, but the lack of self-esteem, but it was counteracted. You know, it's not that you can get rid of the disease, but the effect of the disease you can counteract. So even someone saying, well, a low birth, you still can't, you know, in that culture, you still won't be able to take a Brahmin thread, but you counteracted, they would say to you, and we do give Brahmin threads, you counteracted the effect of low birth, that you can't participate in certain powerful spiritual activities. Okay?
Yeah, you said the person who is of low birth, the way first thing was counteracted, even though he cannot participate in certain spiritual activities, is by how?
The point I made is that, yeah, actually it says, and you know, some people disagree, different acharyas will disagree, but certainly Bhakti Siddhanta, he just gave Brahmin threads to people, even in sutra families. So whatever effect there was of low birth can become completely counteracted. But in some cultures, you would become qualified, but socially you couldn't do it because they still maintain some kind of caste-type system or something.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Hanan and Suri. Thank you for the class.
Hare Bo. Thank you. Good. One more person.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Malati.
You got my little message?
I did. I will talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. Okay. Hare Krishna. So I'll go now because
yes.
I'm just going to... Still a little tired from yesterday. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.